This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Good morning and welcome back to another edition of Phillies Today. Kyle Forsini back with you guys for another half hour. And we finally have some baseball to watch, to talk about, to look at, to think about. Spring training is back. If you remember at the last couple of minutes of last week's episode, I mentioned to you guys I was excited that we would have a game to break down or games to talk about, players to think about, guys that you're trying to see if they're going to make the roster or whatnot, all things of that nature. We finally got to see the guys in red back in action. Unfortunately, have not won a game in spring training yet. They lost to the Pirates 7-6 after a bullpen collapse in game one and then kind of just got hammered by the Orioles in game two. Good news is it's spring training. None of that matters, right? You're not having all your guys out there. Now, yesterday, before the rainout, we had an opportunity where we could have seen the opening day lineup potentially on display against Paul Skenes, even if it's only for an inning or two innings, something to that effect. So we didn't end up getting to see that, but I want to touch on that. We'll go over what that lineup was and why I think that might be the opening day lineup, why I think maybe that should be the opening day lineup. And two, I was a very big move Schwarber out of the leadoff spot kind of guy. If you've listened to me, you know that at the end of last season when they finally got beat in the playoffs, I said, I'm ready to change whatever needs to be changed to get this team over the hump. And if that means moving Kyle Schwarber out of the leadoff spot just for the sake of doing it, I was all right with it. Spoiler alert, I might feel a little bit differently now. I don't know. We'll talk about that as we go on. I also want to talk about the potential closer situation we've got here with Orion Kerkering and Jordan Romano, who I think is going to be the closer, what Ruben Amaro Jr. had said on Sports Radio 94 WIP last week as he was asked that same question on who he thinks will be the closer, and I agree with him. I just have one thing that kind of bothers me about where the Phillies could end up going with the closer spot, and I also want to talk about somebody that we may not really think of as a guy who's going to make the roster. He's not going to make the roster, but a guy that hit a towering home run the other day that got me thinking maybe this is somebody we can look forward to in the future when it relates to the Phillies offense, specifically in the outfield. So that's what we're going to hop into right now. I want to start out with the fact of the Phillies lineup and what it would have been had they faced Paul Skenes yesterday prior to the rainout. For those that don't know, they were scheduled to face the Pirates. Yesterday, there was some rain in Clearwater. Unfortunately, we were not able to see it. And it was one that I really thought was going to have the opportunity to be their opening day lineup. What I think this team could have potentially trotted out there. I might change some things around a little bit in this lineup from what Rob Thompson put out there. Granted, it was only the second game of spring training, right? It's not like this is something that's going to be set in stone. Rob Thompson has admitted to that he's going to be tinkering with the lineup a little bit and trying to figure out what is the best combination of guys, whatever. So if you didn't see the lineup, obviously, because the game didn't happen, here's what it would have been yesterday against Skenes. It would have been Trey Turner leading off playing shortstop, Kyle Schwarber batting second and DHing, Bryce Harper batting third and playing first base, Alec Bohm batting fourth and playing third, Castellanos batting fifth, playing right field, Stott sixth, playing second base, JT seventh, catching, Max Kepler eighth, playing left field, and then Oscar Mercado batting ninth for the Phillies in that lineup. And Christopher Sanchez was going to be the starting pitcher in that game. Now, of course, didn't happen, so we didn't get to end up seeing it. And I'm not surprised that that was the lineup that Rob Thompson was putting out there, because they were facing Paul Skeens. I figured he would want to put kind of an A team out there. They've never faced Paul Skeens. You know, he had that phenomenal rookie season last year, all that stuff, rookie of the year, whatever, but he did not ever face the Phillies, so they kind of dodged him. They weren't able to get a look at him. This would have been their opportunity to get their first look at Paul Skeens, who I'm sure they will face a lot in their careers, and I'm sure they'll eventually end up facing him this year. Depends on how the schedule plays out, but it wouldn't shock me at all if they ended up facing Skeens this year. So I like that Thompson was putting out that lineup to just get these guys an eyeball on him, just get them to see what he does, see what all of his pitches are, see how much his fastball cuts, stuff to that effect, see his curveball, whatever. I saw a video, by the way, of Paul Skeens pitching the other day from behind home plate. It's like somebody was videoing it with a batter in there during, I think it was Pirates practice. And watching that guy pitch, I was like, how does anybody hit this? Truly, the hardest thing to do in sports is hitting a baseball from a pitcher. It is insane. If you watch the video that I'm talking about, look it up on Twitter or wherever you can find the video of Paul Skeens pitching. It has nasty cut action to it at like 100 miles an hour, and you just have no chance. The batter in the video of it, he's bailing out on a pitch that's going to cut towards the outer part of the plate, but it starts almost on like the inner half. He just steps in the bucket, flails the shoulder, comes way out. He's not even close to the pitch, and it's just like, man, I don't know how these guys hit this. But Phillies didn't have an opportunity to try and do that. They haven't had one in their careers against Paul Skeens, and will remain to be seen if they end up facing him at all throughout spring training. They were scheduled to play them, like I said the other day. Their next game against Pittsburgh is Friday, March 7th. They then play them again on Tuesday, March 18th. So only two more opportunities for the Phillies to potentially face Paul Skeens before the regular season goes. I think we would all like to see them at least face him in spring training so they can get a feel for what it is he might throw when they eventually do have to face him, but not going to have that as of yet. So we will not see the Phillies facing Paul Skeens at all until the big league season finally does commence and it does start. Now, the Phillies are playing Tampa Bay today, and this is the lineup that the Rays are trotting out there against the Phillies. It'll be Yandy Diaz, Brandon Lau, Eloy Jimenez, Christopher Morel, Richie Palacios, Curtis Meade, Jose Caballero, Chandler Simpson, and Logan Driscoll. The starting pitcher today for Tampa Bay is Taj Bradley. Taj Bradley's been a guy who's been up and down with them in the big leagues. He's never really stuck. He's pretty solid. I think this is either his second or third year. He was a rookie a couple of years ago, but that's the lineup that they will be facing against Tampa Bay today. The Phillies have not released their lineup for what they will be doing today, so what remains to be seen. Now, Thompson did say as well on Sunday during that game versus Baltimore that when they came back home, they were going to then have Wheeler and Jesus Luzardo start, but they're not coming back home until the 27th to face the Yankees and the Red Sox. So those are the two guys that would start those first two games. I think Wheeler first, then Luzardo, which I'm incredibly excited for. You know, I've talked about it numerous times. I think Luzardo is the 1A to Zach Wheeler as long as he remains healthy. I think you put him in the two spot. You have Nola 3, Sanchez 4, Ranger 5, or you could even do Wheeler, Luzardo, Sanchez, Nola, Ranger, whatever way you want to configure it. I don't think Thompson would do that. I think he has too much respect for Aaron Nola. And in the grand scheme of things, I don't know how important your rotation necessarily is lining up when you're in the regular season. If it's a postseason series, we know that you're going to manage things a little bit differently. We saw him do that last year when he had Chris Sanchez start game two of the NLDS as opposed to Aaron Nola. So that's where I would think he would configure the pitching rotation a little bit differently. And it wouldn't shock me at all either if they have Jesus Luzardo down in the four spot as well. I think that they kind of alluded to that or talked about it, or I heard somebody talk about it, that that's the way that they were going to have the rotation go. And I think Luzardo's going to get, he's just going to move his way up in the rotation. I really do. I think that's how good this guy is. And I think a lot of people are sleeping on him. Now, I also understand, too, that they didn't make any real moves offensively. They bring in Max Kepler, but outside of that, not a whole lot of offense that's been found in the offseason. They haven't done anything to upgrade that lineup. It's really trotting out the same guys, which I understand a lot of people, you know, are sick of, whatever. So I understand if Luzardo's been slept on a little bit because of the fact that we didn't get any offense. And we all know that's been the issue when you've gotten to the playoffs. It hasn't been that the pitchers have been giving up 10 runs in four innings. It's been the fact that you couldn't score a run no matter what you tried to do. I mean, when they played the Mets in game four of the NLDS, the game could have went on for 15, 20 innings. They would have been able to scratch across another run. That's just what it felt like when the offense was getting cold in the postseason. So, you know, I hear you, and I get the people that are really skeptical and look at this team a little bit differently. They don't give them those same, you know, eyes that they had previous. They really believed in this team. They wanted to think that this was the core that was going to get the next World Series title, and trying out the same lineup that's failed three straight years. I get it. You know, I understand why you might have some hesitancy in putting all your chips into the center of the table with this team. But again, just trust in me that Lizardo's going to be really good. I really believe that he's going to be one of the best pitchers in a Phillies uniform as long as he stays healthy. That's the caveat. He's had some injury history, but if that guy stays healthy, he's going to be great. All right, now, I mentioned, too, what the lineup was, obviously, that they were going to have if they had to face Paul Skeens and the Pirates. Didn't end up happening, of course. But, and, you know, I've been banging the table all offseason long. I did not want Kyle Schwarber leading off anymore. I was tired of it. I didn't want to see it. I understand that it has an impact on it, right? I get it. That Schwarber can lead off the game with a home run, but Kyle Schwarber can also lead off the game with a single and then not be able to steal second base. And then he can also hold up Trey Turner, who's hitting behind him, and all that stuff, right? So you take the good with the bad when it comes to Kyle Schwarber in the leadoff spot. And there's plenty of both. There's plenty of good. There's plenty of bad. And just seeing somebody else possibly leading off for the Phillies, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right. And here is my worry. And this is genuine because I really think that this could be where things end up going if it doesn't succeed, right? How long is the leash that you give Trey Turner in the leadoff spot if that's what they end up doing to start opening day? And I think it's going to be, by the way. I think Thompson's ready to move on from Schwarber in the leadoff spot, at least temporarily, to see how it plays out. But what happens if, you know, do you give him till Memorial Day? Do you give him till the end of April? Do you give him 2 weeks? What's, you know, they don't have some sort of easy schedule, right, to start off the year. Now, look, they start with Washington and Colorado, but after that you go Dodgers, Braves, St. Louis, Giants, Mets, Cubs. You know, it's not like it's super easy of a month of April they have. So if things aren't going well and your lineup is not producing the way that you want it to, when do you make that switch? Do you just continuously leave Trey Turner in there if he's not performing, if Schwarber's not performing in the spot that he's at? That's my fear with this. That's my fear, and that's why I'm almost saying, you know what, just put Schwarber back in the leadoff spot. It's what we're used to, and if things completely fall apart flat on their face there and he, for whatever reason, can't do it, then you can change it, do whatever you want. But I don't think that would happen. I know that he's used to doing it. I know that that's how the lineup has been configured for a long period of time. So I get, you know, why people would want to have Schwarber move out of that leadoff spot, and I get why Thompson is also so used to having Schwarber in that leadoff spot, and maybe the reason why he doesn't want to change that, but that's where I'm at with this, and that's where I'm kind of a little bit like, man, I don't know if I even want to tinker with it. The lineup, it was good for a lot, you know, during last season. If it's not going to be good with somebody else in the leadoff spot, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know? And I know a lot of people would argue, even I would argue at times, that it was broken in the postseason, but 162 games is a pretty big sample size, and it wasn't just the leadoff guy that wasn't getting it done in the postseason. It was the collective effort of the lineup that couldn't get the job done. So I don't know. That's where I stand with that. I hate going back on my word and something that I pounded my drum for all offseason long. We'll see what they do in the regular season. I'm not going to tell you I'll be angry if Trey Turner leads off, but I'm going to tell you that it's going to look a little bit different, and I'm going to have a shorter leash than I think a lot of people would. Now, that being said, if they do have Turner lead off, I don't like what Thompson had in the lineup for the other day with Schwarber batting second and Harper batting third. I would flip-flop those two, and I would have Harper batting second, Schwarber batting third. I want Schwarber to get as many opportunities to drive in runs as he can, and it's not to say that I don't think Harper should as well, but I also want Harper getting more at-bats than Schwarber. I want Harper getting up there with Trey Turner on second base after a leadoff double. I want Bryce Harper getting 4, 5, 6 at-bats a game, 6 may be a little egregious, but 5 at-bats a game as opposed to 4, you know, in an opportunity when you can have somebody come up and need a clutch hit. I'm always a fan of Bryce Harper in that spot. We know that Bryce Harper lives for those moments, and that's not to say Kyle Schwarber doesn't, but I think that Harper has shined in those moments in the postseason, in the regular season, the whole nine yards for his entire tenure here. So I would have him batting second as opposed to Schwarber. I would then have Schwarber batting third. You could either flip-flop Bohm or Castellanos. You know, Bohm is not the prototypical four-hole hitter. We've been over that. Everybody knows that. He's not somebody who's going to drive in 120 runs and hit 35 home runs. He just doesn't have that in him, and we've said forever, oh, if he could just lift the ball, if he could just, you know, he's not going to do it. I mean, this is season five, 2020, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. This is year six of Alec Boehm in the Phillies lineup. He's not doing whatever we've, you know, said that he could do or we thought that he could do. Whatever he is at this point in his career is what he is. You know, he's not changing his swing. He's not changing his approach to the plate. He said as much after the end of last season, if you remember, when he was interviewed in the clubhouse directly after the game. And he was like, you know, God, everybody wants me to do this. I'm not going to change who I am. I'm not going to change the hitter I am because of a little bit of a fan displeasure, right? So, paraphrasing there, of course, it's not exactly what he said, but that's where we're at with the lineup. That's what Thompson was going to trot out. That's what I think should be trotted out. You could flip-flop Boehm and Castellanos, and then really the bottom four of the order. I don't think Stott should be hitting up that high in the sixth hole. I would have Stott more 8 or 9 and see what happens. I mean, Stott was playing injured last year, so who knows if he's gonna have a rebound season this year. Hopefully more of what he did in 23 as opposed to 24, but jury's out. I think this is a big season for Stott to see if he's going to be a guy who can stick around or if he's a guy that's used for trade bait. So remains to be seen on that front. All right. Now, I mentioned I wanted to get to Jordan Romano or Orion Kerkering. Who do I think should be the closer this season? What did Ruben Amaro say? So on the morning show, I believe on WIP, I believe it was the morning show last week, Ruben Amaro was asked, you know, who he thought was going to be the closer for the Phillies. And what he said is he thinks Jordan Romano will get the first crack at it. He'll be the guy that until he screws it up, and hopefully he doesn't, by the way, hopefully Romano does not screw it up at all, but he will be the guy, right? And if he falters, if they feel like they need to get somebody else in there, it will be Orion Kerkering, who he believed would be the closer, you know, midway through the season for the remainder of it. He thinks that Kerkering will be the Phillies closer for the majority of this year, for this season. And I think there's two ways I look at this. I like it because I think Kerkering is a very good pitcher. We've seen the nasty stuff that Kerkering has. He can make guys look absolutely silly. We've seen Kerkering walk the bases loaded and then give up a backbreaking hit, right? Like, it's a reliever. You're gonna get both ends of the spectrum there. You're gonna get the good, you're gonna get the bad, you're just gonna hope it evens out and it's mostly good as opposed to mostly bad. All right. That's just kind of the life of a reliever. You don't know what a guy's gonna have on any given night. So I think that Kerkering is their best option for a closer. What worries me with him, and by the way, what I love about Kerkering too is how young he is and how he's come into situations at such a young age and just kind of figured it out. Just figured out his way through the season, through the situations that he's been thrown in, and kind of just rolled with the punches. I mean, he came up incredibly young. He shot through the Phillies minor league system. He was an A-ball, and he was in the big leagues in the same season. Like, he has figured it out in a way that a lot of other guys haven't. So I give props to him for that, and it makes me more confident knowing that a guy has been able to still be successful after all the change that he went through in a season and a half or whatever it was, you know, to get to the opportunity where all of a sudden in 2025, we're talking about him as a potential closer. Now, what worries me about Kerkering is he's basically a two-pitch pitcher. It's fastball and then sliders, curveball, whatever you want to call that pitch that he throws. Sweeper is what a lot of people call it now. You know, he's got a nasty off-speed pitch, but when you only have two pitches, that's what worries me. Obviously, you need to have great location if you're only going to throw two pitches. You need to be able to kind of pitch backwards or have hitters off balance. And in a lot of ways, Kerkering can, and don't get me wrong, there's been plenty of good pitchers that have closed who have only had two pitches, right? Craig Kimbrell, early in his career, only had two pitches. He was a two-pitch guy. So it's not to be said that, you know, and I know Craig Kimbrell is a sore subject in this city, but it's the truth of the matter. One of the best closers in recent memory, you know, he's a two-pitch pitcher. So it's not to say that Kerkering can't do it, but it definitely worries me. I like a guy who can kind of throw the kitchen sink at you. Now, of course, a jack of all trades could be a master of none, or if he's got a whole lot of stuff in his repertoire, he might not be great with anything. So if Kerkering is great with the two pitches that he has, I'm all for it. So be it. You know, let it rock. We'll see if he can take that job and run with it. I know Caleb I kind of just put all my trust in Caleb Cotham, and I believe that he can get the best out of guys. He can make you the best pitcher that you need to be and turn guys from the scrap heap into great pitchers like we saw with Jeff Hoffman, right? So I have all the faith in the world in Caleb Cotham, and it's nice to be able to say that because for so many years, we were watching horrible pitchers after horrible pitchers. Guys wouldn't stay here for very long. They were out the door. We were having the guys like Pat Neshek come in 2015 when the Phillies were horrific, but he was at the end of his career and he was the only all-star, you know. So we've seen both ends of this. I'm very happy that we finally have – a good pitching coach, a guy that can get pitchers in the door here and make them successful and make them thrive in the major leagues. Christopher Sanchez is a huge one. Ranger Suarez, another big one, right? And then you got the same thing with some of the relievers and Kirkering and what we saw from Jeff Hoffman. He really straightened Alvarado out for a while. Sir Anthony is kind of the lone wolf of the guy that really didn't thrive with Caleb Cotham, and he kind of fell apart after 2022. But then you also hope that you get the same from Jesus Luzardo, and you hope that when Andrew Painter eventually comes up, which is hopefully going to be in June or July, spoiler alert, I drafted him in fantasy baseball in the last round, last pick of the draft, so I'm stashing him on my bench, hoping that he comes up and is a contributor to the Phillies this season. But, you know, you hope that that's what you get from Cotham with these guys, as you continue to get the best out of them and have them here for a long time, and don't let guys like Jeff Hoffman walk. And maybe he can bounce back with Romano, right? So I have faith in Cotham that that's what's going to happen, and that's just kind of how I look at it. If Kirkring's only got two pitches, so be it. I think Cotham can really work with him and make him one of the best closers in baseball, because he's kind of nails. He's got that in him to be one of the best. And how nice would that be to just have a shutdown closer, a guy that when he comes in the ballgame, you know is going to get the job done. I mean, we had Alvarado for a little bit where we felt like he was pretty good and he was going to get the job done. Then he got wild. Craig Kimbrell for the first half of 2023 seemed like he was the lights out, couldn't do any wrong. And then he hits a wall in July and all of a sudden becomes like one of the worst relievers in baseball and can't do it anymore. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening there. All right, two things real quick that I want to touch on here in the last 4 or 5 minutes. One of them being, I'm excited for Gabriel Rincones Jr. If you didn't watch the game against Baltimore, he hit a towering home run to right field. He was drafted to the Phillies in 2022 in the third round. Has not been a guy that you've really heard about or thought about. It's always been Painter. It's been Crawford. It's been Aiden Miller. Guys like that that you're excited about, that you can't wait to finally get to the big leagues. Rincones, right fielder in the minor leagues. Now, I don't know if they can move him around to left field, center field, right field, whatever. It remains to be seen. But he is a guy that I am very excited to see, hopefully, in a Phillies uniform. Now, I also have the benefit. My girlfriend was the athletic, she interned. She was doing a clinical of athletic training with the Blue Claws while he was there. So she got to tell me, you know, some stuff about him, how he was a good player. And so I always have a little bit of an eye out for some of these minor league guys, because I heard about them. My girlfriend got to see them on a day-in, day-out basis for a season in the summer, you know, watching these guys play. And Rincones was a guy that she mentioned frequently. Now, his minor league stats are not going to blow you out of the water. These are his career stats. He's had 713 at-bats, so a little bit over a season, about a season and a quarter of at-bats. 250 average. He's hit 26 home runs, 92 runs batted in, but he's got 55 stolen bases, which I love. If you're going to be able to get speed out of this guy, and the way that I saw him nuke a home run on Sunday, and I get it, it's spring training, right? It's not like it's the end-all be-all. You don't want to get too excited about spring training, and you don't want to get too down on a guy after spring training. But, man, can you imagine having a guy that's pretty that's at least semi-productive in the 9 spot in your order outside of the black hole that is Johan Rojas? And I know that you've got Brandon Marsh, and he could do the same kind of thing, but if I can have a guy who's homegrown that's going to come up, he's going to be younger, he has more promise. You know, I kind of think at this point, Brandon Marsh is what he is. He's a fine player. He can be good for a month or so, but he's always going to regress back to the mean. But if a guy like Rincones can come up and can be a really solid contributor and can be a guy that you look forward to, and he can get rid of the black hole of Rojas in center field and get rid of that platoon, you know, you can move Marsh to center field and maybe you have Rincones in left, whatever the case may be. Because I don't think Kepler is going to be here long term. He's only here on a 1-year deal, right? So, and I'm not talking about Rincones this year. I'm just talking about for the future. You know, that's exciting to me. That's what I can't wait to see. Maybe move Castellanos to left if Rincones wants to play. Whatever it is, whatever they end up doing, that to me is exciting, and that's what I'm looking forward to. So, watch him in spring training. Keep your eye on him. Be aware of the name Gabriel Rincones Jr. and watch his at-bats and see, and we'll see if he can continue to produce in spring training. He's a non-roster invitee, so obviously not making the roster this year. He's only 23 years old, too. Like I said, drafted in 2022, but just keep your eye on him. Just keep watching him. I think that this guy has an opportunity to be pretty good. And then the last thing, I've only got about a minute left here that I want to touch on. I haven't said it in a long time. It's been a while since I've had to hate on this guy. I cannot watch Garrett Stubbs be my catcher anymore. My backup catcher. I can't. Cannot do it. I saw him starting in the Orioles game. Give me Rafael Marchand or somebody else. I cannot have Garrett Stubbs be my backup catcher. Just can't do it. I know he's not some massive player on the roster. Garrett Stubbs is not winning or losing you games. The rest of the lineup needs to do it. Whatever. I understand. That's fine. I can't watch it anymore. I can't watch the 5'4", 145-pound guy be my catcher who has no pop, has really nothing in the bat, doesn't have a fine defensively, I guess. I don't need him for the vibes. The vibes haven't worked the last 3 years. Let's get a real player up here. Rafael Marchand, who's had a weird career because he hasn't been great in the minor leagues, but every time he's come up in the big leagues, he's contributed. He does have a little bit of pop. Give me him. Let me see him back there behind the plate. He's good defensively. He's got a good arm. Let him be the backup catcher in 2025. I think he will be, but I do have a fear that they're going to have Garrett Stubbs be their backup catcher on opening day, which I will not be happy about. And I'll leave you with that. I'll leave you with that. Sorry for the Garrett Stubbs rant. I know a lot of people are probably rolling their eyes saying he doesn't really make that much of a difference, but I'm sure there's people out there too who feel the same way, who are tired of him being the backup catcher, tired of the vibes crap that has gotten you nowhere in the last three seasons. Let's have a real player be our backup catcher, all right? That's all I'm saying. That's what I'll leave you with. All right. Thanks to everybody who listened. Enjoy the rest of your week. Watch some more spring training baseball coming up this week. We will have more games to dive into next week, which you know I'm excited about, more guys to talk about. Keep your eye out for Gabriel Rincones. Like I said, I think he's going to be good, and we'll talk next week. All right, have a great rest of your week, everybody, and watch some Phils in spring training.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.